it's impossible to know right now how things are going to play out over the next few months and how some of the really difficult situations we're experiencing as a culture will begin to resolve themselves. But one thing that I think will probably happen is that someday we will talk about the year 2020 in historical kinds of terms. Like, I think the events we're seeing take place now, they won't just be important in 2 or 3 years from now, but that the things that are happening right now are probably things that someday, like, my future grandkids, if I would have them, are going to be studying in school, and then I'm going to be talking to them about what it was like to live through this kind of a period in American history. And I don't know if that will happen for sure, but I think that there's a potential that could happen with how much we see taking place in our world right now. And I think that would be true if we were only dealing with a global pandemic. And I think that could be true even if we were only dealing with some of the racial tension and the developments that have taken place there over the last few weeks. And I think it's possible that might only be true even if we were discussing kind of just the sense of political turmoil and divisiveness that we see in American culture right now. But for me, I think the combination of all of those things, and really even how some of that divisiveness has driven conversations taking place around the pandemic and around some of the racial injustice and the actions that we've seen take place over the last few weeks in America, I think that the political divide has really informed a lot of those things, and that this will be a time that we look back on and think just about how divided we were as a people. And we kind of see that taking place from the very top levels of government the whole way down to even the family unit. There were lots of articles that came out. I remember a lot of them around the time of Thanksgiving that were talking about how to talk about politics at Thanksgiving dinner without starting a family fight, you know, or really how to avoid talking about politics when you're with family. There are all kinds of studies that have come out where people have been surveyed about whether they would or would not even be interested in having friendships or romantic relationships with people that have different kind of political ideologies. And certainly, in America, as long as there has been American politics, there's been a level of divide and different opinions on how things should be governed. And that's true as long as there have been politics in any kind of country or situation all around the world. But it feels like there is this increasing divide taking place in America. It seems like there's sort of a polarization happening where people are moving to one direction or the other, and where it's becoming much more difficult for people to experience any kind of relationship or meaningful discussion with people that are different than them. And that's something lamentable that's taking place. And that's something that we aren't immune to in the church. This is just as difficult for people within the church to navigate as it is for people that are outside of the church. And you know, maybe part of the reason for that is that for many of us, it has been kind of drilled into our minds and really into the minds of many Americans that there are two things that you don't discuss, either among polite company, as the saying goes sometimes, or over dinner, and that's politics and religion. That there's something in discussions of politics and religion that have this ability to just bring out a sense of passion or conflict among people that few other topics seem to evoke in people. And so I hope that as you are participating in our online worship gathering, that you aren't doing that over dinner, because as we look at Romans chapter 13, Paul is certainly hitting on both of these things. And so, if you will you read along with me in Romans chapter 13, beginning in verse 1. Paul writes this: "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God." Even just reading this first passage is something that for many of us can kind of evoke this feeling of uneasiness or turmoil when we think about our current context. And before we get into that, though, I think it's important for us to recognize the context in which Paul wrote this letter towards. Important for us to think about what it would be like to be living as a Roman Christian in the first century and hearing this letter. Because for them, you know, they're living in one of the most powerful empires in the history of the world. They're living in an empire that at that point when Paul wrote this letter, that stretched from what's modern day England the whole way to Egypt. The empire was vast. It had all of these different people groups, either people that maybe willingly or with less conflict were brought into the Roman Empire, or other people that were conquered and then brought into this vast and massive and powerful empire. And the leaders of these empires had this godlike status in culture. And when I say godlike status, I don't mean that they were just like popular or that they were celebrities or that people loved them. But I mean that they were actually considered to be gods. That many of the Caesars were revered as demigods, and that for some of them it was after their death that they were voted on and began to be upheld as actual gods and worshipped as gods. And as you can imagine, men that are considered gods hold an incredible amount of authority over other people. And the fact that they held this level of authority, and really at the time that the only qualifications for becoming emperor, while there was some voting process, and while there would become a voting process at some point, that at Paul's time of writing, and for many of the emperors of Rome, really the only qualifications were that they needed to be in the hereditary line of the Caesars, and that they needed to not be assassinated before they became Caesar. And so as you can imagine, with standards like that, there were some good Caesars, and there were a whole lot of Caesars that were unqualified to rule. You know, there were some that ruled with a sense of diplomacy, and for every one that ruled with a sense of diplomacy, there was an emperor that ruled with a sense of tyranny or that just treated people horribly in their rule. You know, there were people like Nero, who's infamous for this, a man who had his own mother killed and who used humans, live humans, to light his dinner parties in his gardens at night as he had them burned in a means of entertaining and impressing people to show off his strength and his power and his authority. And shockingly, Paul almost certainly wrote these words that talk about being subject to governing authorities not under the rule of a good emperor, but under Nero, someone who's held as one of the most infamous emperors of Rome. And even though the Christian persecution wouldn't break out until about 10 years after or 8 years after Paul wrote this letter, he would still be writing under this man who was known for being ruthless towards other humans, this man who was known for having a disregard for human life. And this is how Paul describes what it's like for Christians to live under civil authority. To go on, beginning to read in verse 2, he says this: "Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval, for he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Therefore, one must be in subjection, not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience." Paul teaches the people in Rome that they are subject to governing authorities for several different reasons that he mentions in these first few verses. The first, and we see this in verse 1, is that this is just the way that human life has been organized. This is the design that God implemented for human life, that there would be hierarchies and organization of people. In verse 1, the way that's explained is when he says, those, speaking of the authorities that exist, have been instituted by God. There's this sense, just fundamentally, that organization of people is something that's important and done by design. And then he also teaches that there are advantages to being in good standing with political authorities, with government authorities. We see this in verse 4, where it talks about how the government, the expression it uses is bears the sword. And Paul's writing there to say that if you are in good standing with the government, you don't need to be worried about how the government will bear the sword. It won't be something that you need to be afraid of. He talks about how there's an advantage to being in held in good light by the government. And then finally, he also seems to make this suggestion, this teaching, that being in good standing or being subject to government authorities is something that just seems reasonable in light of what the government is and what the government does. We see that in verse 7 when it says, "Pay to all what is owed to them. Taxes to whom taxes are owed. Revenue to whom revenue is owed. Respect to whom respect is owed. Honor to whom honor is owed." And this seems kind of crazy to see Paul writing this in light of what we know now about Nero and about the kind of ruler that he was. And it seems crazy for us because it seems like when we read this, that Paul is kind of making this argument, or he's providing this teaching for Roman Christians, that they need to live in sort of an absolute subjection to the ruling authorities. That they need to live in kind of an absolute subjection to the government because the government has been instituted by God. And I suppose that, you know, if this was the only piece of the Bible, if Romans chapter 13, verses 1 to 10, if that's the only section of the Bible that someone could ever read, you could get that impression that this is sort of what Paul is suggesting. But if we examine the life of Paul and of many other people throughout Scripture, what we see is that this isn't an argument, and that Paul doesn't make an argument for an unchecked, absolute authority for the government or from the government. Let's read verse 1 again with this in mind. It says, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God." We can read that on one hand with this understanding that God places people in positions of authority, and so because we respect God, we need to respect what they say. Because we understand that we are under them, we need to listen to whatever it is that they say. We need to do whatever is asked of us. But if we think about the way that people of Rome would have heard this, what we also see is that what Paul writes here is something that is subversive to the Roman Empire, something that would fly in the face of the Roman emperors, because Paul appears to be rejecting the notion that Roman emperors are God. He is rejecting this idea that they are the source of all authority. He's rejecting this idea that there isn't any kind of limit to the power that they hold over people, because Paul is teaching them that even Roman emperors are beholden to God, that God is the only one who is in ultimate authority. And we also see that it kind of in that passage we read in verse 7, you know, in there it talks about how we pay taxes that are due. It talks about we pay what is owed of us. It talks about how we give respect in the measure that it is owed. It talks about how we give honor in proportion to how it is owed. And on one side of the coin, it's important that we're doing enough in that regard, that we're being faithful as citizens in that regard. But on the other side of that same coin, Paul is teaching that you do what is required of you, that you do what is owed, but that you don't give an unchecked, absolute level of authority to the government, because you don't give that sort of unchecked sense of absolute authority to anyone but God. And of course, If we look at the narrative elements of Scripture, the stories that are describing how life played out, we see that Paul and others did things that would be considered disobedient in the eyes of civil authority. Paul writes a number of his letters while he's sitting in prison. Paul goes to jail or is on trial a number of times for disobeying authorities when they instructed him not to minister, or when they were upset that he had preached the gospel, or when there had been a disruption around some of the ministry of Paul and others that had taken place. We also see this in the life of Peter, where on one hand, Peter taught things that were very similar to Paul. In 1 Peter 2, verses 13 and 14, he wrote, "Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme or to governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good." So Peter takes a line that's very similar to Paul in Romans chapter 13. But if we look at the life of Peter in Acts chapter 5, there's this event where Peter is being questioned for preaching the gospel after he's been instructed not to. And in verse 29, he says, and it says, Peter and the others who are with him say, "We must obey God rather than men." And we see this in the Old Testament as well. When an edict is made that prohibits people from praying, Daniel rejects that and continues to pray to God. When Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when there's an edict made that requires them to bow down and worship to a statue, they refuse to do that because they worship and honor God. When Queen Esther, when Esther is faced with this situation where her people are in serious trouble, she breaks the law that exists, that she doesn't go to speak to the king unless someone is called to appear before the king, a law that could have put her life in danger. And she risks that and breaks that law in an attempt to save her people. Over and over again, we can see that there is a history of civil disobedience, or a history of not being beholden to the government when what is being asked goes against or attempts to supersede the laws and requirements of God. When what the government asks people to do contradicts what God asks people to do, it's clear in Scripture that people violate the laws that the government has in place to seek to be obedient to the requirements of God. There's a hierarchy that exists in civil life, but ultimately God is in the position of supreme authority, and no government will ever take that place from him. So that leaves us with the question, then how do we live in this world? How do we interact with the government? What does it look like for us to be people like Paul is writing about here, who are subject to authorities and who give them what they are owed? And he answers that in Romans chapter 13, verses 8 to 10, as he writes, "Owe no one anything except to love each other. For the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment are summed up in this word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." We live in a confusing season, just in life in general, but confusing as well for how Christians, or how Americans in general, whether you're a person of a different faith or of no faith at all, how we interact with the government. Because on one hand, it feels right now in regards to this situation with the pandemic, where local authorities could be prescribing one course of action, and the state authority could be prescribing something different, and the federal government could be prescribing a third difference. And so it's confusing to know what to do or how to interact with what is being asked of us right now. And that's for everyone across the board, whether you are a person of faith or not. But for Christians that are seeking to be people that live subject to authorities, it's a confusing matter. And at the same time, as if that were not confusing enough, over the last few weeks with the racial strife and the tension that has broken out across America, we've seen images all across America where there are these moments of unrest, where people are speaking up against patterns of injustice or instances of injustice, and where we are seeking people attempt to love their neighbor as themselves, like Paul is writing about here, and to try to make changes to assure that people are taken care of and that people are treated with a sense of equality. And we've seen some people acting in that kind of way, and we've also seen other people that are not acting with that kind of kindness and love for neighbor. It's been a confusing way to know, it's been confusing to know how we as Christians should interact well with some of those dialogues and discussions that are taking place. And there's a level where, while things can be confusing for us now, and things have been confusing for people in the past, and things will remain confusing for people in the future, there's a level where we can't use that as an opportunity to cop out and to not engage with what's taking place. Where we can't use that to dismiss what's happening, because it is so important for us as God's people to engage well with the world around us and appropriately with ruling authorities. You know, the 20th century American pastor and theologian Carl Henry said that Christians should work through civil authority for the advancement of justice and human good. And he says that when Christians work with civil authority on those things, that it provides critical illumination. People see things differently. It provides a personal example and vocational leadership. And that's kind of this picture of the church at its best. The church seeking to enact God's justice and promote God's justice in the world around us. And certainly while the church has not always gotten political engagement right, while there have been problems that have existed there, Christians that have engaged with civil authorities have been able to do incredible things throughout the history of the church. You know, if we look back at this Roman period, it was really the work of Christians that were helpful to bringing an end in the Roman Empire to practices like infanticide and child abandonment and even the gladiator games, where people were being killed for entertainment or sport. It was Christians that helped to bring an end to that. In times after that, in Europe, Christians were largely responsible for bringing an end to practices that exist among tribes or other religions of human sacrifice. They restored a level of safety and dignity in that kind of a way. To look to a more recent past, even though it's still a couple hundred years ago, it was the faith of William Wilberforce that led him to so passionately pursue the abolishment of slavery in England. And of course, even to look at the more recent past, just over the last few decades, it was not just any man who was responsible as kind of the key figure and leader of the civil rights movement in America, but it was Pastor Martin Luther King Jr. that was the leader of the civil rights movement here in America. You know, even while we find ourselves in a confusing time where it's difficult to know how exactly or when or what to say when we are engaging in culture, it would be wise for us to heed the words of Romans chapter 13, verse 10, where Paul says, "Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law." Let's be those kinds of citizens as we seek to interact with the world around us.